W4DJC, W4DJW.
Good morning, Dave. How are you doing?
Just came in the house from taking 184 pictures from 400 feet to 300 feet to 200 feet to 100 feet. 46 pictures at each altitude, looking like the inside of a balloon, a hot air balloon, except it's the outside of the world. Anyway, I didn't know you flew pattern airplanes.
Yeah, that's been, close to 50 years ago, I guess. I started flying with RC planes back around 1970, I guess. And maybe, 69 or 70, I guess. And I flew when I was living in South Georgia. They had a, it wasn't too far from Warner Robins Air Force Base, I guess, over, I think it was near Cordell, Georgia, somewhere over there. They had a nice setup there where you could fly. Had a control line circle set up. And I don't remember the name of this, been so long I don't remember the name of the place. It was just a little park there set up for RC and control line flying. And I started out just flying basic stuff, pre-channel, and then had a guy that I knew pretty well was interested in it too, so we started going over there, and the more interested I got in it, I tried a 60 Chaos, which is, Joe Brady design, and we had the thing where a guy could hook up to my controller and my transmitter and keep me from totally crashing the thing. And I learned a little bit about it, and I flew for a while, but I ran out of money before I got very good, because I crashed more than a few planes trying to do that top amp maneuver. I'd get up there, and of course I was on 27 megahertz back in those days, and when I got a 72 megahertz radio, that didn't have a problem, but I crashed a few back in the days of CVs. I think some guys did on purpose when they drive by, they keep that mic in the computer and go crazy, my reflexes are certainly too slow to do it now. But those planes were, they were easy to fly. They were fast. And I'm sure everything is a whole lot faster now, like crisper. But I did for a while, but, like I said, I ran out of money before I got very good.
Well, I know how that goes. I looked at, back in that same time, I was looking at the pattern planes in the RC Modeler and the AMA Model Aviation magazines all the time. And I did buy a few of them and built them and flew them, but never really got into competition with them. I just flew them for the fun of it. And I'd learn how to do knife edge, and I'd go upside down over the runway, as fast as I could. Try to kick up some grass as you go by really fast, over 100 miles an hour. It was a lot of fun, but never went competing with those like I did with the, I like the fun fly stuff more. The go fast and turn and spin and flat spin and thing they call Dixie Death, three loops, three rolls, and three touch and goes or something like that, and land. Those kinds of maneuvers, doing as much as you could, as fast as you could, rather than the precision flying. Precision flying took a lot of patience, and it took a lot of money, both. The fun fly stuff didn't take that much money, and as long as you go out and practice a bunch, you get good at it. It's not like waiting, for a long period of time. You go way out, and then you hold a position and go, like a four-point turn or eight-point turn. That's hard. Those maneuvers are difficult.
A lot more discipline than I had then, and maybe even than I have now. The guy that I flew with, he had been doing it for years. He was probably in his late 40s, early 50s, even then. And he'd been an electronics technician in the Army, I think, doing something. And he was working for some electronics company then. And he had access to a lot of stuff that, I had not gotten interested in electronics very much in those days, and he just knew what to do. And he was also a good builder, too. He could build stuff straight and square, and that's got a lot to do with it. He, He had one of these, I know you've seen these things, he had one of these jigs to build up your wing zone, and I can't remember the name of that thing now, but you could set you could set the dihedral and the whole deal on it if you needed to. And it was, those things were expensive in those days, and the kits were expensive too. That variety kit or that chaos, it was 50 or 60 bucks, but everything was pre-cut. It had all the plywood stuff cut out and all the wing stuff cut out. It was a lot easier to build, but you didn't have to do much to get it wrong. And if you got it wrong, those planes fly so fast, it didn't take much to go ahead and put a spin on it for you. I know you know what I'm talking about. If you get going fast enough, if something's not right, it's going to go wanky on you.
Yeah, I don't know if you knew Ed Goodgame. I think he was doing that. He was selling craft radios back at that time, the synthesized frequencies, so that you could change frequency. If you went to the field and somebody else was on your frequency, you could change frequency. But he had those radios. Those were kind of cool. They were ahead of their time. Those were expensive too. But I know about you'd get a wing jig and you put a little bit of dihedral out there on the wing tips that you don't have at the wing root, so that when you go into a high-speed turn, it wants to settle in on the middle. It doesn't want to tip stall as a high-speed tip stall, which you might be going left, and all of a sudden you find yourself upside down and going right and going down really quick. I did that. I did that with one of those, I can't remember the name of that plane, but it was really, really nice plane. And if you just get going too fast and turning too tight, and you don't have any washout in your wings to help it settle in that groove, it'll get off the bubble on you in a heartbeat, and it'll plant the balsa tree. I don't know. I don't see that much. I don't see the pattern flying is that popular anymore. You ever go out to Joe Knoll's once a year? That contest out, not really a contest. It's just a get together down there and down toward Woodruff.
Here in Anderson, they had when Dow Battleship was still operating, they had a club out here on 29, like you're headed towards Hartwell Dam. They had a huge field out there, and there were guys flying out there all the time when it was still operating. And I flew out there a time or two back in the 70s, but I hadn't flown anything since probably 74, 75, I guess, Dave. After I got married and got working and all that sort of thing, and just didn't do any more flying. Matter of fact, the last RC plane of any kind I had was an RC sailplane, and which I enjoyed doing that. That was a little easier to do. I could get on a slope and fly it. We had a couple of guys there in Rock Hill that used, one of the guys had a winch, and we'd use a winch to pull them up sometimes. Other times we'd use one of those high launch catapults, but the winch was the coolest way to do it, because at that winch point, you could put them up there in a hurry.
W4DJW. I remember that plant you were talking about in Anderson. I believe Steve is the one that grabbed me one time, K4VWA. That's when he was out of school already, and I was still going to school, or I was about to graduate sometime in the 70s, mid to late 70s. And he told me about that plant, and we went down there and flew out in front of it. They flew for quite, I mean, you could fly there for a long time until somebody put a quarter scale through the roof of the plant, and I think that's when they put the hiatus on that. No more flying. I think the plant manager said, okay, I didn't know you could do that, so that was the end of that flying. But we went down there and flew a few times, but it was further away than WCRC was for me. That's where I went most of the time, until they opened Blue Ridge up here at Blue Ridge Lake Robinson. And Blue Ridge is now down below Michelin, down toward Ware Place. But Larry Kennedy and Boots Blanton used to fly those sailplanes. Well, I'd go out early in the morning and wait for the sun to come up, and I'd start practicing. And then I'd practice like most of the day. And then that's like if I was working second or third shift, I'd practice in the mornings. And they'd come up there and set up their winches like you were talking about. They'd drag a winch all the way down the length of the runway. And they'd have them going in both directions in case the wind changed direction. and they'd be out there flying gliders. They'd get them up, and then they wind up their winches, and then I'd go out there practice touch and goes. They'd be sitting out in lawn chairs looking up at the sky once they got their gliders up there, and I'd be down on the ground doing touch and goes. I had a good time. Those were fun days, but no more. You don't see that anymore these days.
That way, I've been listening to you for a while there. That little RC field over there on 417 between Woodruff Road and 101 there, they closed that one down. I don't know if that's the one Dave was talking about over next to Woodruff, but they closed that one down, and it's fixed to be a subdivision.
Yeah, that's the same one I was talking about, Kevin. That's the old WCRC field. It was there from 1964 until a year and a half, 2 years ago. That's when Mr. White owned all that land, and he let them build the airfield there in 1964, and it lasted till just a couple of years ago. He's passed away. It went to his kids. His kids wanted to sell it, but they wanted more for it than the land was worth at the point of time that they got a hold of it. So they just sat on it for a while. And then I heard they got into a disagreement. And so after that disagreement, the only way to settle it was to sell the land and split the proceeds. So I think they sold it for less than they wanted for it. But that forced us off of that land and onto Greenville County's landfill, which is only a couple of miles away. They shut down the landfill a few years ago, and now they're waiting to do something with the land. That's the same thing that happened at Blue Ridge Cup. It was up here at the Lake Robinson. They moved down below Michelin, down to an old landfill. Then they filled the landfill out, and it's nice and flat, right, where an old landfill was. So good place to put a runway. Same thing with the WCRC field. They replaced it with the one a couple of miles away from it, right near the where we used to haul the trash from the airfield, W4DJW. Good morning, Kevin.
Morning there, Dave. There's another one over here off of 25. I can't remember how to get to it, but if you're going down 25, it's right there off of 86 somewhere. I think that's 86 at Lee's, where the new Goodwill is. Right there, right before you get into Moonville. That's the food line. You turn right there somewhere, and you go out through there, and there's another one out there. They have the RC quarter scale car track and the landing strip there too. Both of them is all together. We used to go out there and watch a guy fly a jet. And once we go out there and watch that guy fly that jet, you talking about fun? That was fun. He'd fly that thing upside down. I mean, he'd come in there about 4 feet off the ground and fly that joker across the runway upside down. That was a fun time. We'd take our cars out there and run that track.
Yeah, I thought when I got into ham radio, I thought ham radio was a whole lot bigger than model aviation, because I was into model aviation long before I got into ham radio. And then I knew there was like multiple airfields in every county. Every county's got two or three radio clubs. Anderson's got a few. Greenville's got a few. Easley has Pickens, Oconee, up into Georgia, or over into Georgia, up into North Carolina. They're just all over the place. But you usually only find about one amateur radio club per county. So as it turns out, I think there's more model aviation enthusiasts than there are amateur radio enthusiasts. Over to you, Jerry, W4DJW. We may have lost Jerry, Kevin.
I didn't mean to run him out there. He might want to get him a cup of coffee or something. But that area strip over there, man, that was one of the funnest places that I went to watch, some people fly them things. I was interested in them at one time. But they said it took a lot of skill to fly them things and get them back on the ground without crashing them. I looked at buying one. I can't remember what that thing was called. It looked like one of the, I think it was a P-51 Mustang. That's what I was looking to buy, and that thing was about $700. And I never did buy it. I figured I'd end up crashing. So I just just ended up getting into the RC cars. I run the RC cars and raced them there for a while. And had to get out of it. You know, just didn't have enough time to do what I really wanted to do with them. That's, you know, when you get into the race and stuff, that's, you know, that's a lot, you know. You got to have the time to do, you know, whatever you need to do. And working, I never did get the time to go practice a lot, you know, with some of the guys. So I just ended up getting out of it, period. And ended up buying me a drone later on down the road, which worked out really well. But I have destinated here, and I'll say 73s to y'all, and fixing to get out and go in and watch the play here at church today, having Christmas play. But I'll say 73 to you, Dave, and I'll say 73s to John, too. But y'all have a good one out that way. KN4UBG. I'll be clear on your final.
Okay, Kevin. Well, once you get the hang of it, they're not that bad to fly. They're a lot of fun. It's enjoyable. I like the cars, too. Cars are fun, too. My son liked them. We got him cars, and I probably ran his cars as much as he did until we knocked the faucet off of the hot water heater in the basement, and it flooded the basement with the car. This car's powerful. Anyway, Kevin, good talking to you. Enjoy that service, and we'll look forward to doing it again sometime. KN4UBG, W4DJW.
Have a good day, Kevin. Good talking to you again. I had to run downstairs. So me and my wife wanted me to do some package measurements. I could she could get some boxes. She's over at Walmart. But, Dave, I used to try. I did the car seat for a while, and that's another one of those muddy pits. It's not like a drone, I don't think. I think you can go a little deeper in that rabbit hole with a drone than you can anything.
That is true, but it's just amazing to me. Before they started calling them drones, I was working with a team that's out in California that it later turned into 3DR with their flight controllers and playing around with trying to get them to stabilize. So before you could actually get them to get accelerometers on side of a board, right, to detect when it starts to lift and get PID controllers to look at that and correct for when a burst of wind hits them or something like that to keep them stable. It's pretty fun trying to get them there. And then DJI, I think, perfected those algorithms, and later 3DR did too. And that's when anybody could fly them at that point, and that's when they started calling them drones. But it is kind of fun. I like programmable flight where you can put waypoints out there and you say, okay, you take it off and you hit the button, you say, okay, fly that mission. The automation piece of it, the programming part of it, is what I like.
Brother-in-law does it's not primary occupation, but he does work for DOD. He's a professor at Georgia Tech, and he does that. He does some drone work. He does. It's not drone like, the ones he works on are, for military type stuff, it is, where they launch these multiple hordes of them, swarms of drones, where he'll launch 30 or 40 of them at a time now to communicate to each other, that sort of thing. That's been several years ago. He did some work on the F-35, too. He's not so much in the program. He's in more in the hardware part of it, I guess you'd say, Dave, but he was showing me some of the stuff that he could show me when they were doing some work at Fort Benning, and that's been several years ago, and there's some of it's pretty amazing. There's some stuff on the drawing board. Of course, the technology just grows, it just grows geometrically. It's just like, it's just so fast, it changes and gets better, multiplies just time and time again in just a matter of months sometimes. It's pretty amazing what they can do with them now. And I think that the thing about a drone that always has fascinated me is being able to watch where you're going, having an onboard camera. That's always been cool.
Yeah, that's what I just got finished doing a few minutes ago. I did I do that and take 184 pictures in a flight. It's like taking pictures of the inside of a basketball, but it's really the world as the drone sees it from all around it. But that there's some video on YouTube that shows a guy that he has like a ping pong ball, and there's three drones that have a net underneath of a net that's draped down, and one is it's a net that has three corners to it, and he throws the like a ping pong ball or something at them, and they go, the three of them, they're talking to each other, right? Every 200 milliseconds, they send instructions to each other, where I am, what I'm going to do, what you should do. And they all make decisions on what's coming next. So he just throws a ping pong ball at them, and the three of them work together to position that net underneath of where the trajectory says that that ping pong ball is going to land. And they catch it in the net. And then they communicate with each other, and they all three go in opposite directions at the right speed and the right lift, right, the right trajectory, up and out, to stretch the net, which will throw the ping pong ball back, and they throw it right back at him. He catches it right in front of his face, and then he throws it back to him. And they just have back and forth, three of them talking to each other to coordinate. Each one has a corner of the net, and all three of them coordinate, and they throw that ping pong ball back at him, and he catches it. It is, like you said, it's pretty amazing technology.
Kind of thinking works out, but they do these practice type drones where they use disposable type, they launch them with catapults and that sort of thing, and they do disposable type drones so they can just test how they talk to each other and what kind of formations to fly and that sort of thing. That way, if they destroy one, they're not destroying a $300,000 drone or something like that. I think. He told me how much money they had involved in them. But they actually do phone ones sometimes that are weighted so that they will mimic some of the flight patterns of the full size ones. But it was pretty interesting. I think they launched 30 or 40 at a time. Like I said, that's been 4 or 5 years ago. I have no idea what he's into now. He was doing the driverless car thing. The other thing he was doing, which I found even more fascinating, was the underwater drones that they used to check these underwater cables and that sort of thing. And some of the stuff they were working on was some type of sub-type drone. And I think he told me, I think I was telling Tom in Zero TR about this other day, since I think he'd been in the Navy. I said, yeah, he told me, he said, some of the speeds are classified. He said, they deal with 60 or 70 knots underwater. That's pretty fast.
Yeah, there's just no, like you said, there's no end to what we're going to see them doing in the future. Building, building sky labs, right, where they fly up to the lab, they keep it in stock of all the things that it needs to keep it, like the fuel and food and stuff like that. They just keep continuously making trips all the time. They never stop. Underwater, overwater, on the surface of the water, out in space, they'll be everywhere. And that's what we're doing right now. This is like the 70s are now to us in 2020. 2020 is going to be to them in another 30 or 40 years, like the 70s is to us, where you see the technology just emerging, and then you get to a point like we are right now, and it's just amazing. Can you imagine putting that much more time on it? Like cell phones changed our life overnight, like improvements in quality of car parts, like engines. Cars go more than 30,000. They go 200,000 miles now instead of 30,000 like they used to. It just keeps getting better and better. But those intrigue me. That's something I wanted to do when I retire. That's why I was working on something very similar to what you were talking about, where you've got a repeater station that just takes off. It's a fixed wing airplane. It goes up and it just flies a circle over the same coordinates for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. It's got like solar cells in it, so it can stay up. And then you take the other drones, and you can go out as far as you want because they're going up to it and then coming down to you like a repeater, like the repeater we're using right now. I was doing that before the FAA put a clamp down on everything and took all the fun out of it, W4DJW.
BC Friday, yeah, he had worked on something where they were deploying from aircraft and going back to the aircraft. He, you know, he was telling me some of the things they were been working on. And of course, the little small ones, he didn't get into the tiny ones, but he just does the big ones that can handle some payloads. But they had a, like I said, they had a demonstration recorded then, not where they've taken it, not where he's taking it off. He has a private channel. And he lets me watch some of the stuff every once in a while that I can, some of it's not classified. But it's pretty interesting. And he's one of these guys, Dave. I kind of put him in your category. He's extremely smart, but he can explain it to you so you can understand what he's talking about. And like they worked for AT&T and Lucent and Bell and everybody for years before he got out of that end of the business. He was a fiber optics engineer and designed stuff for Lucent. Then he basically left that and got working for them. And he goes to the ITU conferences too. He stays up on everything. But he was telling me about one spot that he had to go to in Switzerland. They wouldn't let him take anything with him but a pencil and a piece of paper. He couldn't carry any electronics inside this particular area they were working in. I said, that sounds pretty secret. He said, it is pretty secret. But it's interesting. I'd love to learn how to fly a decent sized drone, not a big one, but something to start out with, something that's big enough where I could maneuver around well, but also not something that's too big so I'm not going to crash into a car and kill somebody.
Well, you know, they're pretty easy. They've got a lot of stabilization on them, so they're, if you get in trouble, you're looking at a screen, right, or goggles, one or the other. You just let off and you let it stabilize, and then you raise the camera gimbal up or down and look around. Some of those are built in. They've got accelerometers in your goggles. And when you turn your head left or you turn your head right or you raise your head up, you tilt your head down, the camera on the drone does the exact same thing. The goggles that I have that capability. I never turned it on, but it has that capability. One of the things I was working on is being able to track it, and that's another reason I built that that satellite tracker, because I wanted it also to be able to track the airplanes or to be able to have it follow my head when I'm moving my head around. The antennas follow where I'm pointing my head to get a better signal, right? So you're just moving your head around because you're getting better video signal when you move your head over there, and the antennas that are stationary on the ground follow that, and they learn from you. But anyway, hopefully whenever I retire, I'll be able to still be able to play around with stuff like that. It's just intriguing.
Yes, technology just goes so fast, and you know, that everything gets obsolete, but it's making progress, and you know, some of it's turned out real well for us, and some of it, you know, may not, but the capabilities are there to do a lot of things that'll help us in the long run, I think. We can just get more confident in the reliability of it, and you know, what it, you know, the good things it can be used for. But I've always, you know, those goggles, that sounds pretty cool. I don't think I've seen anything like that, where somebody's actually, you know, somebody other than the 3D goggles, you know, the little things they use for games and that sort of thing. But that virtual reality thing is pretty awesome.
Before CBA.
Well, good morning, David. I see it's still 11:38. I was thinking it's afternoon. Good morning.
And gentlemen, Dave and Jerry, I've got my grandson with me. We're headed to Harbor Freight.
Who's him?
Those ladders that you can, you know, adjust on steps and I'm actually going to use it to hang my airplane when I'm not using it.
I got to build something like that too. I got too many airplanes. They're all stacked up in a corner. You can't get to. You got to get over a bunch of them to get around to the others. So I got some cleanup work like that too. I thought you were getting airplane parts or anything. Have you got a status update on getting your airplane in flying condition?
It's just like it was. I did find out that I can buy. I took one of the controllers apart, and they are crystal controls. So I could just buy a crystal that matches the receiver and the receiver frequency in the airplane.
Usually have to tune those too. I know, like when Joe Nall is here, they've got people there that you can take your equipment to. Well, I don't know if they'll do that old equipment, but they'll tune it up. They'll make sure your transmitter and your receiver are all spot on. They're not like if we're off frequency on VHF, you can tell it. If somebody's input is off frequency by a few megahertz, you can tell it. Same way with your airplane.
Interesting. I didn't even know that. Well, I guess you think the hobby place sells, sells those things, or is that something I have to buy online?
Well, that's expensive equipment. You don't want to buy that. Those are tens of thousands of dollars. But people would bring them to contests, and they'd bring, like Joe Nall, and for a small fee, not much, $5, $10, they'll align them for you. But that's expensive equipment.
I guess if I spent that kind of money, my wife would go off the deep end.
Yeah, that's people that make money off of doing it, that buy that kind of equipment. Go ahead, Jerry.
Hey, David, have you done anything? I heard him talk about when he bought it and got everything working on it and that sort of thing. That old equipment was good in this day. I don't know. I think all the radios have changed so much now, but a few times I made a good radio back in the day, and had Japanese engines. They were nice. That was I think MRC distributed those things. That was a good engine in this day.
I think I'm saying it right. Enya, E-N-Y-A. It's a 80. Whatever. That's the size. I don't know what that means, but it's big.
An 80 is 8/10 of a cubic inch. Yeah, and that's pretty big for a model engine. Like the 049s are less than, they're a 0.5 of a cubic inch. 80 is 8/10, and those are pretty powerful.
For stroke.
Your cutter offer there if you're not careful with it, too.
And four strokes take a little time to get to. I mean, once you get them dialed in, they're really nice, but they can be finicky till you figure out how to get them dialed in.
Round it off at the end, but you stick a starter on it and hook the starter of 12 volts, and it spins the engine over for you.
Did you get one of those with your purchase?
Negative. I'm going to have to buy one of those, and that's about $100, and then I'll see. I got to get a thing to attach to the glow plug, and so I got a few things to buy. All right, well, I'm pulling in Harbor Freight here, so I'll carry on, and talk to you later. So I hope y'all have a good day. Looks like it's going to be a beautiful day. 73's KB4CBA.
Catch you later, David. Good talking to you. Good luck with your hunt, W4DJW.
Don't get in there and let something else catch your eye. I don't go in places like that. If somebody goes in one of those places, I'm going to buy one of those Chinese lays, and I know I have to work on it for 6 months to get it accurate enough to turn anything. Have a good afternoon. But Dave, I had a guy that worked with one of the loom manufacturers. He lost part of one of his fingers years ago, and he flew those giant scale planes. And evidently, I thought he'd done it in a mail accident. He said no. He said one of the props from years ago called him.
I remember one of the guys I used to go racing with. We'd do pylon racing. He was out practicing early one morning, and he got his engine started. And these are planes that would go well over 100 miles an hour, and with less than a 2 foot wingspan, and turning up 20,000 to 30,000 RPM with the prop. And he was running he started it up. It was running full blast. He was running out to the runway where he was going to hand launch it, and he fell on it, and that prop, just like a screw, went up his chest. It filleted his chest open. And there was happened to be one guy there at the airfield. And they got at WCRC, and they got Spartanburg County out there because that was in Spartanburg County. And they rushed him to the hospital and saved his life. It nearly cost him his life. If hadn't been anybody else out there, he'd have laid out there and bled to death.
Oh, now, how he told me it had happened, but missing part of a finger is kind of a thing if you work in a mill for 30 years. So I have all mine, thank goodness. But it was, especially people working in the card rooms, and you'd see a lot of guys in there from years ago when things weren't guarded, they'd lose a finger or even part of a finger, even a couple of them sometimes. And I thought maybe he was a little bit older than I was, and I thought maybe he got hurt that. He said, nope. He said, radio control plane. And he said, this has been quite a few years before, and evidently he got a little careless, and it caught him. It took the first joint of his index finger. He said it lopped it off like you'd think a surgeon did it.
I don't doubt that one bit, especially those bigger ones. They are kind of scary. And you do, when you do it for years on end, you do kind of get, you have those points where you get lax, and they do catch you. Thankfully, I've never had it with me. Even the electric, you'd think it'd be a lot less with electric. But if you're moving your arms around your transmitter and the electric's sitting right there and it's not running, it's not idling, and your hand happens to hit the throttle, and I have had that happen before, you could lose a finger really, really easy with those. They've got the nylon props that are razor sharp. That could do this, like you said, it looked like a surgeon did it.
It's got an electric motor in it big enough to fly a pretty good sized plane as fast as it does. It's got a lot of torque and a lot of power, just like having a rotary saw with it without the saw blade on it. I know some of them, I've seen some of them that some of these guys, when they started racing, I was not involved in it. Back then, I know some of the guys were racing electric. Then it was some type of pylon racing. It wasn't like what you were talking about. They weren't going terribly fast, but they were going, they were doing 60 or 70 miles an hour, I guess. And those planes had some pretty powerful engines in those for electric, because they were crisp, and I was surprised. They're not totally quiet, but they're a lot quieter than a combustion type engine is.
That's one of the things I missed about the nitro alcohol and nitromethane and castor oil or whatever synthetic oil you wanted to use, is when you'd hear that start up in the morning, there's just nothing, no sound, there's not another sound unless like it. And then when you smell the nitro burning, there's not another smell like that. Then you switch over to electric and all of that's gone, and it's like, man, I miss that.
What you mean? That's the way it is, I guess. It's just one of those things. That nostalgia, if you got a whiff of it now, it'd take you back 40 years, I guess. But like I said, I always enjoyed it. I did enough to know a little bit about it, but not really get very good at any of it. But I did enjoy it. Especially when I had somebody to fly with. We had a group flying. It was a lot of fun. We had a had an older guy there that when I was down in South Georgia, he had a twin, I guess it was a twin Cherokee, I guess. Man, he could had retracts. Man, that thing, he flew that thing. As, you know, I mean, it was just smooth, and he had the typical coveralls on. I know you remember those, and had the craft gear, and he was all spiffed up out there. The plane was pristine. Man, he could fly that thing. It was a great flying plane. He wanted me to say, "You want to try to fly this?" I said, "Not in 1,000,000 years would I want to try."
That reminds me, there was a guy. There's a club up in Fletcher, North Carolina, and there's a guy there that was a super, super good pilot, RC pilot. His name was Carter Pounder, and he had this airplane he called Flatfoot, and it looked kind of like an F-15, but it was a prop-driven plane. It had dual rudders, and the rudders were not vertical; they weren't parallel. They were in a V shape, and he would fly that thing super fast, and he would go down the runway upside down, and then he'd turn when he got in the middle of the runway upside down, and he'd go through the gap in the trees that were back past their runway, and he would keep turning and go behind the trees, and you would hear the airplane, but you wouldn't see it. And he'd go down to the other end of the runway. You wouldn't see anything, right? And then all of a sudden it would emerge out from behind the trees at the other end of the runway. That took nerves of steel. He wasn't seeing anything, but he was flying it based on the sound and based on his experience from having done it before. But he could do just about any maneuver, and he had tons of patience. He was very graceful, very smooth, very risky. He'd also go out behind it, and he'd come back through the gap in the trees, right? And that was even harder, because when do you start turning, right? When you go behind the stand of trees, when do you start turning to come out of the gap? But he had all that figured out. Some people are just really, really good.
Some people have a talent for it. I just remember one of the first things one of the guys told me, is just remember now, when the plane is coming to you and that wing dips, he said, you turn it the opposite direction now. Don't turn it the same direction. He said, you'll make a balsa tree out there if you're not too cautious, you're not real cautious with it. I had a little trainer that I was flying. It was a 60-inch with a, I think it must have had a 40. Might have had a 20. I think it had a 40 on it. I had a little trainer I was flying when I'd been flying for a while. It was just a 3-channel deal, no airlines. And he did teach me how to fly it upside down. He taught me how to land it upside down in the weeds too, without tearing it. That's one of the last pieces of 8mm film I think I've got. It's still you can still see where I landed that plane upside down. And I showed it to my father-in-law years ago. He said, "How'd you do that?" I said, "I had a real pro show me how to do that." I said, "I only did it once though, because I could see myself hitting a rock and just tearing it all to pieces."
that is a lot of fun. There used to be a guy in the WCRC club that would take one, and he'd go upside down. He'd come over the runway, and he'd point it away from the people, the flight line, and he'd keep going slower and slower and slower, and then he would punch full down in the elevator and full throttle at the same time, and the rudder would hit the ground, and it would hold it there for a second until the throttle got up enough speed to pull it up off of the ground. And so he just plant his rudder in the ground and then take off upside down from the rudder being the only thing touching. He needless to say, he put a lot of them in the dirt before he learned how to do that. W4DJW.
I don't think I've ever seen anybody do that. That'd be pretty cool. Well, Dave, I got to run. My wife just sent me a text message. She's ready for me to pick her up at Walmart, but she's in line, so no telling how long it'll be. But I better get going with this. And it was nice talking to you, Jay. Glad everything's going well in the Greenville area. Hopefully we'll get to see our grandkids next week. So we're planning on spending Christmas Eve with them over in Malden. And so hopefully we'll get to see. We hadn't seen them a few times this year at a distance, but They've been since they've been out of school since Friday. We think everything will be okay. But listen, I'll talk to you maybe a little bit later on. You have a good afternoon. Well, is it afternoon yet? Not quite. Good morning. Hope you have a good afternoon, Dave. W4DJW, N4DJC.
Okay, Jerry. Well, it's good reminiscing about old-time airplane flying with you. I used to do that with Ray on here, too. He used to do the same thing. Anyway, I enjoyed it. Take care. Stay safe. Enjoy the grandkids. W4DJW, clear and listening.